So to step into another venue, this morning in the Journal, there was an article regarding the reductions of the contributions to the pension. They're talking it could result or is resulting into a 0.30 less contribution into the pensions. How is that going to impact things?
I have not seen communication that has taken effect at the district level. I'm not sure if he's just talking about the state level. If it's the state level, then the districts won't feel it at all.
I believe the article said locals as well.
All right. I have not seen it. As soon as I get information, I'll be happy to get back to you on that.
And are you going to be able to get back to us on that tomorrow?
I'll inquire. If they've got something they're willing to communicate, I'd be happy to.
The other concern I have is for your proposed 7% increase in healthcare. I don't quite understand how you can project a 7% increase in the cost of healthcare. Could you explain that to us?
Well, our self-insurance program has done the analysis with regards to high-cost medical claims that we've incurred on a number of staff. When we went out to bid recently with the city, they did the analysis, and the consultant that was hired to review it affirmed the information that they received from WB. And so because we have no surpluses built up, we're actually in a deficit position because it was all eaten up over the last few years, bid was a 7% increase. So that's a bid number.
So you're saying that's a bid number from the healthcare provider?
Yes.
Tell us about the cost of your errors and omissions.
That's a program that we purchased through the Rhode Island Interlocal Trust. And the Rhode Island Interlocal Trust has been experiencing terrible claims with regards to errors and omissions across the whole state of Rhode Island. And when they rate the pool and its performance, they calculate the premium. So those are actual premium calculation quotes we receive from Rhode Island Interlocal Trust.
Can you tell us what the percentage of the budget is for the administrative costs or the staffing in the administration versus the cost of the teachers?
Just give me a moment, I'll look it up. I don't have a calculator with me. No, I got it right here. So what I'm going to be looking at, Mr. Lattiser, is on page 29 of the detailed budget, that the professional management and administration category, which is our principals, our central office administration, and that group, which is $4,650,000. Hang on one second. $4,651,615. And the teachers is $75,402,587. And a total salary is $94,308,435. And so plus I1 divided by I2. The, and I don't know if you want to include mid-managers or not. If you would choose to include sure. them, that's another $1,043,849. They represent 1.2. The teachers union represents 80% of the $94 million. The professional managers, which are all the principals, et cetera, 4.9%. And the mid-managers are 1.2. So if you want to lump all management together, you're looking at 6.1 versus 80%.
So in totality, what we have is for, with respect to the budget, 82%, somewhere thereabouts, 82% of the budget is for salaries and benefits. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mr. Ferrucci, I'm going back to the healthcare for a minute. What is the cost of a family plan and a single plan?
We've got a number of different plans depending on the employee group. Hang on 1 second. Sorry, I'll just be a minute.
That's okay.
I'm looking at the documents that were provided by Marsh McLuhan, the organization that did the analysis. And I think they got it in here with the rates. Here we go. For FY21, our predominant class, here we go. For we have HealthMate from through Blue Cross, $131 a month for an individual plan, and $2,107 for a family plan. Our second most popular, this is based on employee group, plan number 004 is $813 for an individual and $2,079. So it's just a little over $800 for individuals and just around $2,100 for families per month.
Did you say for the HealthMate, the single plan is $131 a month?
No, $831.
So those are the two plans you offer, the HealthMate and the 004?
Yeah, there's two HealthMate, 003, 004, and those are split between the two major employee groups. Then, of course, we've got various ones for retirees, depending on the year they retired and those kinds of things. But the ones that drive our budget are the ones I just mentioned.
Also, your budget code item 51115, substitute salaries. That's a $2.1 million for your budget.
Yes.
So what was that line item? How much of that line item have you used this year?
I'd have to look it up. As of May 12th, our last report to the school committee, $1.3 million.
So I think it's fair to say we're not going to have any more substitute teacher expenses between now and the end of the month or the end of the school year. Is that not really safe?
Not for teachers, but our hourly employees, because we do have them back working, that some of them would have coverage for vacation and or sick time. But it would be minimal, yes. I'm hoping the savings from that category offsets our $1 million shortfall on the out of district tuition that the school committee has a report of.
On the, it says subtotal, this is under summarized expenses by category on page 107, it says. It says subtotal other purchased services, $22,983,964. What is that, that purchased services?
I'm sorry, which one, which line again was that?
It's substitute other purchased services. It's on either page 016 or page 107. I've got both of them on my page here.
Oh, that's page, I'm showing page 16. For $22,983,000?
Yes.
Okay, that's a compilation of a bunch of different accounts. You would have to go down to page 020. And that's the breakdown of what makes up that category, other purchase services. And the predominance in that cluster is transportation contract is 10.7, and then four categories of out of district tuitions. Two of them are regular ed, two of them are special ed. But halfway down the page, 2.4, 6.3, 1.2, $1.5 million are all out of district tuitions. So 8.7, 9, 10, 11.5. is out of district tuitions, and 10.7 is transportation, and then you've got scattered dollars amongst the rest.
So that, how is that out of state tuition calculated or determined?
The out of state, out of district tuition for regular ed is predicated on our per pupil allocations that RIDE calculates annually. So it's not the full $19,000, but it's a significant portion of it. The special ed is based on type of program and service where they're serviced. Under special ed, the $6.3 million 55630 category is tuition paid to facilities like Bradley Hospital and the like. They're very expensive. They could be between $75,000 and $100,000 per pupil. The category just below that, Tuition Ed Services Agency, is our WB, West Bay Collaborative Program that we work in partnership with. We provide the facilities at Green, and then we pay to support some of it. But we've done calculation after calculation. If those students that attend there went to outplaced districts paying tuition, we would pay double the $1.2 million. So it's cost-effective to partner with West Bay Collaborative.
So our out-of-district tuition, that has increased significantly, I would think.
Yes, it has. Even looking back as early as FY 2018, which is on the report, $900,000 was our out-of-district tuition for the career and techs and the pathways. 4.6 for special ed makes it 5.5. $980,000 was make it 6.4, and 7.6 million as early as FY 2018. So yes, each year we demonstrate the growth. But I provided the charts to show the breakdown of the regular ed ones and how the growth has been.
And in your proposed budget, have you taken into consideration the reduction in electricity, heat, perhaps cooling, that has not been used over the last couple of months?
Not into next year. Next year, we know what our pricing is, and we've gotten efficiencies in programs that we've put in, And those are built into the prices budgeted for next year. If we have a typical winter, because this past year has not been a typical winter, any cost savings that are accruing would be part of what the school committee hope would be able to offset some of our purchases in the next month or so. One of the things I didn't mention earlier, but we have already built in that it typically costs us about $220,000 to $240,000 a year in our custodial supplies. We only budgeted, if you look at it, $125,000 or thereabouts. We already did a pre-buy, but we went over budget by close to $100,000 this year because the schools were closed early. We bought the wax and the stripper and all those products because our staff are already starting to prepare the buildings to open. So that was already a reduction that we built into next year's budget to try and eliminate some of the requests of the community.
And you talked about it earlier, and I think we've had this conversation in previous budgets too, with respect to premium absorption. Tell us what that number is again that the taxpayers are being asked to pay above and beyond what the employees of the school department are paying, because I think the school department is the only one that has that clause, I believe, in their contract.
Yes, we're down to only one employee group that has that clause where it's actually a fixed contribution, and that contribution was fixed as far back as 2015. We've calculated and put on page, give me 1 second. Here we go. On page 13 of the big document, under the health insurance, the one staff employee group that has a fixed contribution, if they had a 20% increase for this year, their cost that we're absorbing is $320,000. If we had a 20% of what it currently costs us and we're able to pass through the whole thing budgetarily, it's $1 million savings for the district.
So I would say that's something to keep in mind for issues that may be coming up in the future. The next question I have, I'm not sure if you want to answer Mr. Ferrucci or Dr. Thornton does. How long have we had an assistant superintendent?
Phil? I'll defer to the superintendent.
So looking back at the structures in Warwick, we have had different organizational charts. Typically in Warwick for the last several years, you've seen a director of secondary and a director of elementary. Going back some years earlier, you did have an assistant superintendent, but it's varied.
So we had one going back some time. I don't recall or know what that time was. Perhaps one of my colleagues who've been serving longer than I have would. Superintendent, my question to you is, why are we paying you $192,275 a year in salary, and we have to pay an assistant superintendent $154,242?
The model of having a soup and assistant soup is the typical standard you see in Rhode Island. The assistant soup I would characterize as primarily focused on teaching and learning and the things that matter most to moving student achievement forward. Superintendent, certainly in charge of all those aspects, but also dealing with everything else that you have to deal with, whether it be busing, contracts, state house, you have it. But that's the pretty standard setup we have. Keep in mind also when we did this transition, we actually didn't fill another position, so we didn't add a position to get that.
But I'm more interested in what we're doing here in the city of Warwick as opposed what the trend is to other communities. And what I see here is a significant salary that we're paying to the superintendent And I would expect you, as the CEO of the school department, to have a very heavy load on your plate. So that's a number that I find somewhat interesting. Mr. President, that's all I have right now.
If you compare districts of our size around the nation, that's a pretty standard number.
I'm all set for now, Mr. President.
I have some questions and comments when there's a moment.
Yeah, Councilman Sinapi.
First, can someone verify that they can actually hear me?
I can hear you.
Perfect.
I can hear you.
So I don't have questions so much as I do just comments. For those who don't know, the school department and I and the chair of the school committee and at one point other members of the school committee have been meeting for, God, I think we've already crossed over 7 hours now leading up to this meeting, working on their budget, reviewing it, discussing it, which is why I don't have any questions because I've already asked mine, but not to mention it is an ongoing conversation to try to work on this to make sure we get it resolved because the goal is to make sure students are not negatively impacted for their learning, athletics are not impacted, and teachers are not impacted in the ability to do their job. And as of now, none of that is on the table. The things that are concerning, though, that we want to make sure we somehow address, like the WISE pension and whatnot, we don't want to have to zero that out again, or I should say, we don't want them to have to zero it out again, because that would be unfortunate, especially after last time. But thankfully, because they've been so on board with working together, this has been a much better process than last year, infinitely so. I'm very happy to see how committed they are to working on things, and I'm glad to see we're still working on it going forward this week. So I'll reserve my questions for when I meet with them again, or the ones remaining anyway.
Thank you.
Mr. President?
Yes, Councilwoman Travis.
Yes, I just wanted to follow up. I'm trying to take some notes, but I wanted to ask Mr. Ferrucci, did you say that we have 137 of the out of district coming up for this next new year?
I hear your questions. Give me a moment.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay. We have 137 budgeted for the pathways and the out of district career and techs, and we have 116 for charter schools. So between
right.
the two of them, it's 150. I mean, 250.
Okay, and they're going anywhere in our region, you're saying?
No, they're going anywhere in the state of Rhode Island.
Oh, the charter is, but what about the other ones?
Both charter and
pathways. Oh, really?
The only reason I distinguish between the two is we pay transportation for the students in pathways and career and tech in our region.
That's right.
So North Kingston's outside of our region. It's a pathway. We pay the tuition. We don't have to pay to bus them.
Okay. Another question I have, seeing that we've been closed and a lot of things haven't been done with people going into the schools, how are we looking as far as in the fall, as far as some of the repairs that we had scheduled?
All of our repairs are actually moving along. The cleaning is on schedule. We've got 28 capital projects going on right now between the bond phase, if cash release one and cash release two. We've got fire alarms going in. We've got roofs going on. We have 6 or 7 more playgrounds going into our elementary schools this summer. It's going to be very aggressive, but from the fortunate side, with the schools being out early, we're getting in early, which is going to take a lot of pressure off for us to prepare the buildings, no matter what we have to do for September, because we'll be able to get into the buildings earlier than what we originally planned, so we can take care of whatever regulations come out.
Good. All right. Thank you very much.
Mr. President, I have another question, if I might.
Sure, Councilman Lattice.
Mr. Ferrucci, I was just... Sorry, running some quick numbers. We have we have 180 days. You said we have 60 days of off time. So that's roughly 1/3 or it is one-third. And of your budget of $9,670,000, I believe it is, I come up with a cost savings of about $3.2 million. Where is the difference between your numbers and my numbers?
Our actual out-of-district costs, I think they were off kilter from the state side, which is part of that differential.
So what does that mean?
We paid a little bit more than budget on our out-of-district transportation because those costs fluctuate depending on how many students ride a bus.
That doesn't explain to me the $1.2 million difference using, you know, averages.
I can get back to you, Mr. Lattison.
So it's fair to say that right now you have numbers of about $2 million savings, and I have numbers of about $3.2 million.
Okay.
And you're going to get back to us and let us know what and why those differences are.
Yep.
The other thing in the savings, what's the savings, or how much has the district saved in graduation costs this year?
I don't know offhand. I don't know if they're incurring expenses for the uniqueness of what they're doing. The actual graduation cost that's most significant is the rental of about $15,000, but the other costs of materials and things, I don't know what they're incurring. We've got police officers that we typically don't pay for that are going to have to be on site. So I would guess somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe $8,000 to $10,000 in savings.
How much did you spend last year on graduations?
I don't know what it is in totality. Like I said, the most cost, identifiable cost is the rental of the facility when we used to use CCRI, which is $15,000.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Frucci, I was just looking at page 32 of the budget, and it mentions staff reductions, elementary declining enrollment. Could you address that issue?
Yeah. Early on, there were two elementary positions where we had, I believe, three classrooms, and the numbers of students only supported two. I forget which two schools in particular. I believe Ms. Danbrook is here if you want further information, but that was something that was identified early in the process.
And when you say that there is a reduction, you're talking about the reduction in the need for elementary school teachers. Could you address that issue at the junior high or high school level? Are you seeing a decline in enrollment at the high school and junior high level?
The superintendent mentioned he'll jump on that one.
I can talk about that one. Essentially, at the high school level, it's really about student course selection. Students elect classes. Then you fill the classes or sections with number of sections you need. So you may have more of a need in one area and less of a need in the other. This year, if memory serves, we did make some reductions, I believe, at Pilgrim in some areas. We also didn't add in other areas. So it's kind of an ebb and a flow.
So is there an overall staff reduction at the junior high and the high school level? Could you hear my question? Can you hear me?
Actually, we had Mr. McCaffrey on the call, so I think I defer to Bill for the detail on the high school. Mr. McCaffrey?
At Pilgrim, I believe it's approximately seven positions, a reduction of seven positions.
And what about at Tollgate?
Tollgate, there was a 0.5 position, I believe.
And what about the junior highs?
Junior highs, there were no reductions.
And could you just talk about trends, Mr. McCaffrey, while you're looking at that? Are we seeing a trend of?
No, I think we finally matriculated all the Career Center students into Tollgate. That's why you saw a little bit of a drop at Pilgrim as a result of that. And it was a little bit of a bump for Tollgate with the reduction at Pilgrim.
Thank you.
And Mr. Marola, if I may, just for clarification, the staffing plans for budget purposes were being pulled together in mid to tail end of March, when the superintendent put his budget presentation before the school committee on April 21st. From April 1st or thereabouts until the school committee adopted budget, we continued to look at enrollment. So the staffing pattern for teachers that you see, some of what Mr. McCaffrey mentioned was known in March and was not included. The two cut that we talked about was because there were more elementaries scheduled in early April, but was determined not needed by mid-April once we got firm numbers from the elementaries. So just understand that the two cut is not the full seven cut from where we stand this year. It's just the timing of how the budget was prepared and when we ended up needing to pull the positions.
And I think Councilman Lattisaw had touched on this, but we had some discussion last year about the pensions, and you had touched on it on a few of your pages here about, you know, being, I believe the number was 93% funded because of overpayments in the pensions in previous years. So are you suggesting the contributions remain at the levels that the actuaries suggested, at a minimum level or at a high level or someplace in between?
Well, my concern is this. I think with all the turmoil we had last year and the understanding of what the impact of contribution versus actuarial reports, what that really meant and what have you. But going forward, and this is the piece that was identified 5 or 6 years ago that created the concern even back then. What we have in the packet for folks to understand is this, that it was an actuarial report that was prepared July 1st, 2018, that said a contribution range should be a minimum of $1 million to an alternative contribution of $1.2 million. And at the time, the plan was 92.5% funded. 92.95% funded, excuse me. The school department contributed $1.8 million. So the question is, how much was over-contributed? Well, depending on $1 million or $1.2 million, was either $800,000 or $600,000. One would think that if you over-contributed by $600,000 on the alternative, that the unfunded liability should go down even further, because it said if you put in $1 million, it would have been enough. When the report was done on July 1st, 2019, including that $1.8 million contribution, they're now saying that the minimum contribution should be $1,130,000. It went up. And the alternative contribution should be $1,459,000. It went up, because the unfunded liability went up. It went from 92.95 down to 91.55 in a year in which we gave $600,000 more than what the alternative suggested. So that was the concern back years ago. It's still a concern. So the recommendation initially was to honor the alternative, because in FY20, this current year, we have budgeted zero. So if the actuary says contribute 1.1 to 1.4 and you're contributing zero, what do you think the report's going to be in October when they look at June 30th, 2020? So this is even before the pandemic and the loss of asset returns and the stock market crash and all those other issues. So yes, we recommended 1.4 because it was a zero this year. It can't be sustained. Having $550,000 go into the program next year, we're going to get, I'm assuming an alternative probably will say it should be about 1.6, and we're going to contribute $500,000. So it's potentially tumbling backwards, which is a major concern, I think, of all involved. But that's why we wanted to reflect on the things that we were looking at. And we knew it was going to happen because there was conversations about changing assumptions. The big thing to understand about actuarial reports is if you assume people are going to pass away at 66 and they're only going to collect their pension for a few years, then you don't need much money in it. The day you say, you know what, most people are living to 80 and now you need a lot more in it, those assumptions drive what these reports say. And the pension committee knew that they were working towards getting to the mortality tables that are current, which are people, males are living to what, 78 and a half to 80 years old, and females are living to 81. They're moving to that. That's what changed the funding amounts on these two reports. And this is before making any adjustment on contribution, which would just, as everybody's conscious of what's exposed and how important it is to make a contribution, and how important it is that the assets return at the 7% that are targeted.
So very important points that you make, Mr. Frucci. So my concern is, what are the actuaries recommending now? And have you asked them to change those assumptions so they reflect more the conditions that we see now, including age and rates of return? And, you know, obviously, if we didn't have that extra money in there, the returns would have been even worse, which is disconcerting because, you know, the city and the school department has to be able to realistically budget what those costs are going to be into the future. And the taxpayers need to know that. And obviously, the retirees want to be secure in their future also.
Correct.
So that was upsetting when that's news is upsetting that the actuarial reports were not accurate and you had to give even more than you actually did.
Well, they were accurate based on the assumptions, which is the mortality table was low. If they elevated the mortality tables, and this is statewide, this is nationwide. So they go by national procedures and protocols. And even to our own state, you know, we hear about how well funded or not funded the state level is. Well, if they're using mortality tables from the 80s and 90s, and they all of a sudden had to jump to 2020, they could have serious. So it goes up slowly, incrementally, till it catches up. Those are the things that the pension committee wrestled with when this was talked about for the last 5 years. But to your point today, we won't know the position of the pension plan until October now, September. They got to close the year out June 30th. They get the data July and August. They create their reports in September. The current pension committee is the one that dictates the pension assumptions, but I believe that all moving to get to the current mortality table and what the payback is. The alternative is saying, if you have a liability and you owe $6 million, if you divide it over 10 years, you got to put in $600,000. Well, if you divide it over 30 years, you only have to put in $60,000, or, you know, that kind of number. So that assumption drives those alternatives. I think the biggest red flag today is this. We contributed zero today. If we strike the $500,000 next year, we're going to find out in October because we did zero and we're now eroding, you know, they may say it might be $1.8 million to $2.2 million. That's the piece I don't know until they get all the resources back. And then we all got to be careful of not overreacting to the loss in the value of the stocks. I think the stocks will rebound. If it's stock driven, investment driven, that will come back. If it's because we're not buying the stocks regularly, then that's what you're going to have to play catch up. So you're going to have a really good picture, I think, in mid-September. Right now, it's just the canary in the coal mine saying, caution, caution.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from council members?
I have a question.
Councilman Qualley.
Mr. Ferrucci, I have three things I want to ask you about, but one is on something you just said. Did you say that the number that is used concerning pensions is that there is they use 7% as the rate of return on the investments?
Yes.
And isn't that rather high?
Not on a historical 10-year window. On a year-to-year basis, it can be. But the years, 3-4 years ago, when we were making contributions, we were buying low. And because we weren't tapping and having to sell those assets to fund the pension payments that were due at the time, those assets grew. If you look at a 10-year window, we probably had 9% returns on our investments during that period. Those will offset our upcoming fours and fives. And so we do experience studies that do 10-year window looks, and we have in fact been meeting our assumptions. Under state law, about 5 years ago, they require experience studies. And if it's proven that your assumptions don't align with your realities, then they make you change your assumptions. And so if you say 7% and you only show you do 6 or 5.5, they require you to move it back down to 5 or 6%. And then you have a big bold banner across your report saying, you know, your unfunded liability is escalating because all of a sudden now you're not making it on interest returns and investment returns, so you got to contribute more. But our experience studies have shown that we've achieved it.
Okay, I understand what you're saying and looking at over a 10-year period, but I still, I'm not the numbers person, but I am the canary saying that I think that those numbers are high, even spread out over a 10-year period, but it's just a concern that I had. The second thing I wanted to ask was about the cancellation of all the spring activities, including athletics. I can understand that there should be some transportation savings on that. But I had a question about, like, in sports or after-school activity leaders where they did not get the chance to perform the duties that they wish they could and provide the students with the after-school activities and sports that I wish they were able to, but that's out of our control. How, if a coach or somebody that is leading an after-school activity that doesn't get the opportunity to perform that duty, are they still paid the extra salary for that activity?
The spring sports coaches typically have to turn in a final report at the conclusion. Those documents have not been turned into my office yet. I don't know if there's going to be a claim to be compensated for it. I would defer if anybody else knew in our audience this afternoon. With regards to the extracurricular activities that may go all school year, I think we need to revisit that question, because we set that stipend up because they're doing it all school year. And I don't know how much time they put in on the early end of it. And I don't know how much time they would spend in the tail end. And I think I see Ms. Backus take her mic off, so maybe she has something to say to that.
I believe a grievance has been filed for non-payment on the spring coaches in athletics. So at this point, we're waiting for that to be heard. We're certainly not planning to pay them in full if we don't have to.
I understand that, and that's a reason. I mean, it's certainly unprecedented times we're living in, and that may be decided by some grievance or some statewide decision on how that's going to be done, that Warwick's just going to be forced to follow suit that of what is done. But I was just curious about that. The other thing I want to know is, what is the latest date that the schools would need to know whether they will be able to go forward with the fall athletic and other after school activities? Can anyone answer that question?
I can start. I think right now we're still waiting to, like, here we meet twice a week with state representatives and districts around the state, and this is certainly one of the topics. In terms of planning for the fall, we certainly can't wait to the last minute. I would expect in the month of June, we have to have all of these concepts nailed down, or we'd have to be looking at cancellations in the fall.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen, but if it does happen, that it's going to affect budgets. And even if it does, we do go forward. I know that many of the health concerns are over the traveling of the athletes, that they don't want them to be put on buses and going to events because that's not social distancing. So it may be some sort of a modified program in order to allow the students to have the opportunity to have this activity, which I think is an essential part of the educational process. But they may have to be modified in order to be able to do it in what other people might say would be safest conditions. That's just a commentary, I guess.
Thank you, Councilman Corley. Do you have any other further questions, Councilman Corley?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Ricks, I think you had a question.
Should be a brief one. We discussed earlier the, I believe, approximately $750,000 that the state is cutting from its funding compared to this present fiscal year. Is that entirely due to population changes in Warwick, or are there other factors with the state funding formula?
It's predominantly reduction. I'm trying to think. I don't believe we've had a reduction in the state share. Our state share from the state now is 38.5% of the $9,000+. So it's predominantly enrollment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from council members? If not, we've opened the public meeting, and I would remind the public that what was posted, but they are allowed to online raise their hand, and we will call on them. There's also the ability to call in toll-free on several numbers that were listed. I can read those off. Those are the 877-853-5247. Also 888-788-0099. Also 833-548-0276. And 833-548-0282. Obviously, we'll take people as they raise their hands online also. And I'll defer to our IT director. I see a hand up from Walter Hartley. And if I could get his question with the help of Phil, our MIT. Walter, are you there? Walter? Phil, I can't hear Walter. It sounds like a high-pitched sound.
I believe it was some technical difficulties.
Some technical difficulties. Okay, Walter, if you could call back in, we'll get you. And the next person that has their hand up is a cell phone number, which is 467 number. I'm not going to read the rest of the number, but if you could, if that person could identify themselves for the record.
Yes, Barbara Walsh.
Yes, Barbara. And we're on the school department budget, and if you have a question, you're welcome to ask that now.
I have a question about medical insurance and whether at age 65, do any of the school department employees go on Medicare with or without a supplemental plan paid for by the city, or do they keep their medical insurance till whenever?
In the school department, if you're employed, you're eligible for the plan. If you're retired, you're required to take on the Medicare, and it's on your dime on the supplements.
How about when an employee reaches age 65?
I believe they're still on the plan as an employee.
Individual or family, either one?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Phil, if we could go back to Walter, I think he's back on the line. I don't know if his connection's any better. Walter? Walter, your connection is not any... Walter, your connection is not any better. So maybe you could try... Maybe you could try in a different phone number. If we could go to... the next person, Phil, the Samsung. Hi, if you could identify yourself for the record. Is anybody there on a Samsung phone, Phil? And if they are, if they could identify themselves for the record. And that person just hung up. And I'm looking for any other hands up as far as the school department budget goes, which I do not see. And I don't see any questions there either. Okay, so if there are no further questions for the school department, I thank everybody for their time from the school department. And we can move on to the next department, which is the Board of Canvassers. And I believe Dottie said she'd be available to call in. Before we do that, I just wanted to allow the administration at the beginning of their presentation, and they're probably caught a little bit off guard. I see the mayor coming back into the screen. If they would like to make their opening remarks now or reserve those till later, and apologize for the confusion to the administration at the beginning, because I probably should have recognized them first and I recognized the school department instead. I don't know if Mayor is available now, and Mr. DePasquale. Phil, if you could ask them, that would be helpful.
Yes, Mr. President. I'm not prepared at this point in time to make any opening remarks. However, I would like to dive into this budget, which... I would like to dive into the budget, which is very extensive. I know we spent just about 2 hours with the schools, and there's a lot of departments here. So I'm ready to attack the budget.
Go right into the budget.
Of the city council.
Very good. So I believe the next item on the agenda is the Board of Canvassers. And I believe Dottie was calling in from or FaceTiming in. I'm not too sure. Zooming in, I guess. So Phil, is Dottie available from the Board of Canvassers?
Mr. President?
Yes.
If I could start off with the Board of Canvassers. The onset, all department directors will be available to fill in any answers to any questions that anyone may have. However, relative to trying to expedite certain aspects of this project, the budget, I'd like to start off with the Board of Canvassers and first noting that there is a 45.48% increase over last year's budget. And the reason that is because, as we all know, this is an election year, presidential election for that amount, for that matter. That compares to last year's budget, which was a 39% decrease over the prior year budget. I think it's self-explanatory. However, if any council members have any questions of me or the department director on that matter, we're at the pleasure, we're here to answer those questions.
Thank you, Mayor. And I believe we're on page 16 of the budget. And it does list, obviously, an increase because this is an election year. I know that the Board of Canvassers has been working very hard this year because I've been down there quite a few times with the mail-in ballots that are coming up, not only for the presidential election, but for the primaries, which will be coming up in a few months, and then the general election a few months later. Are there any questions on the increases for that department because of due to the elections? I do see one member, so there's no questions from council members, I see. And I do see one hand raised, Phil, on a number, a 934 number. If that person could identify themselves for the record and ask their question regarding the Board of Canvassers.
Councilman Marola, this is Walter Hartley returning your call.
Oh, yes, Walter.
I apologize. I was on the computer, but for some reason, I'm not sure what was going on, so I called in from my home. Have okay. I already missed being able to make a question of Chairman Lattiser in regards to the school?
Well, Chairman Lattiser wasn't presenting on behalf of okay. the school, and unfortunately, all the schools are off line. I do see the chairwoman still available and Councilman Lattiser is here, but if you do have a question, considering the fact you were on the line when we couldn't hear you, we'll certainly entertain it. And if we can answer it, we'll answer it for you, Walter.
Thank you very much, President. My first thing was to commend Mr. Ferrucci for his comment that the doors are always open in dealing with the Wise Union. I certainly wish I could say the same thing. My question was the additional monies that he made a comment that the mayor is giving of $2 million extra dollars to their budget. I'm just wondering where they came up with that $2 million amount. It seems very close to the dollar amount of the cut positions of the municipal employees throughout the city. I'm just wondering if there was any relation to that.
I'm not aware of any relationship between what's going on the municipal side and the school department side of the budget. I don't know if Chairwoman Backus, who's still on, wanted to address that or not, if she's aware of anything like that.
I am not aware of anything.
Okay.
That's the mayor's.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. Then I'll hold my my next questions to as they come up in the process.
Okay, Walter, thank you. Next number, Phil, is the 738 number. Someone has their hand up.
Am I muted?
No, if that person could identify themselves for the record.
This is Dottie McCarthy from the Board of Canvassers.
Oh, thanks for joining us, Dottie. The mayor presented your budget, and we're now in the question and answer phase. And do you have any other statements other than what the mayor has already made?
No, just that there is a major election this year, being a presidential year, and we are expecting a huge turnout. In 2016, the city of Warwick had a 64.97% turnout in Warwick. The state had a 59% turnout, but Warwick was by and large larger than the state. So it's going to be a very busy year, and I'm sure everything will go true to form. Always, I don't want to say perfect, but it will be a good election.
Okay, Dottie, thanks for your comments. Councilman Ricks, do you have a question?
I do. Considering that there are, I believe, only two polling locations scheduled to be open for the presidential election, and I'm not sure if there are any other plans for September or November, either contingency or otherwise, planned to consolidate polling locations. Yet at the same time, I understand that mail ballots are going to be increased.